You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Joe Crawford. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, April 10th, 2017.
So there's no other program that provides this type of assistance, from accessibility to full housing rehab to all emergency home repair in the city or even in the county.
Bloomington Hand Director Doris Sims talks about the importance of funding local housing programs. It's coming up later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we hear from a volunteer working to reduce the spread of invasive species in Monroe County. That will be on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
The Indianapolis-based online review company Angie's List is pulling their advertising from Fox News Channel's The O'Reilly Factor. The announcement comes just days after the company said they had no plans to withdraw ads from the primetime talk show. Several advertisers have pulled support from Bill O'Reilly's show following a New York Times report that Fox News has paid out over $13 million to settle sexual harassment claims against O'Reilly. Five settlements have been paid to women who worked on O'Reilly's show. They allege that O'Reilly made sexual advances and lewd comments and then retaliated against them when they refused his advances. O'Reilly and Fox News have denied those claims. Other companies to pull ads from the O'Reilly Factor include Eli Lilly and Co. and several automakers.
Indiana University has announced they are restricting use of Franklin Hall tomorrow afternoon in connection with a speech by controversial author Charles Murray. IU police will be stationed at each entrance to the building. Guidelines issued by the police state, ticket holders will be allowed to enter the building from the south doors. Anyone else using the building for class or other approved business must enter through the southeast doors and will be required to present a university ID. The speaker, Charles Murray, is described by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a white nationalist who uses, quote, racist pseudoscience and misleading statistics to argue that social inequality is caused by the genetic inferiority of the Black and Latino communities, women, and the poor, unquote. Franklin Hall is home to the IU Media School. A spokesperson for the media school, Ann Kibler, emphasized the media school did not plan or endorse the speech. She says the security restrictions are apparently related to past protests against Murray's speaking events.
So the speaker tomorrow, Charles Murray, has spoken at other universities, and on some occasions his visits have sparked protests. So my understanding is that this is a precautionary measure on the part of IUPD.
IUPD did not return three messages seeking comment today. Murray made national news last month when his speech at Middlebury College was effectively shut down by protesters. That event ended in violence. There is a planned protest outside the event tomorrow. 187 people are marked as either attending or interested in that protest on Facebook. So far, 172 people, mostly students and faculty at IU, have signed an open letter calling the event highly irresponsible and detrimental to the university community. The speech is scheduled to begin at 6 p.m. tomorrow.
And Indiana University student group kept up their push for IU to commit to protecting undocumented students on Friday. UndocuHoosiers Bloomington rallied at the IU sample gates, with speakers demanding the university hire a full-time staff member to serve undocumented students and staff. The group is also pushing the university to declare itself a sanctuary campus, which university administrators have opposed. One of the leaders of UndocuHoosiers Bloomington, Willie Palomo, told the group that organizations like theirs are having serious effects locally and nationally.
We've been holding Know Your Rights workshops to the communities to help families know the best ways to defend themselves against ICE and against police. IU has a DACA website now available. You can Google it. And that website has happened through efforts of our leaders and UndocuHoosiers Bloomington. Our leaders have made national news, including Al Jazeera, for our responses to and for our advocacy for Sanctuary Campus. And right now, this is something troubling, but also shows the strength of our movement. Right now, there's an anti-sanctuary campus bill going through the legislature. That bill shows how afraid they are of the undocumented rights movement across the nation and here in Indiana. We are a really strong coalition of students and community members, and we will not back down.
UndocuHoosiers Bloomington has circulated a petition demanding the university hire a staff member to serve undocumented students and staff by July of this year. The petition states the hire is necessary because of, quote, the extraordinary barriers undocumented people face and the increasingly hostile anti-immigrant climate in Indiana and across the United States, unquote. At the rally on Friday, the Associate Director of Latino Studies at IU, Mincy Martinez Rivera, addressed the group and encouraged them to keep fighting.
Even when people in power, the administration, tell you no, you have to keep pushing forward. Do not despair. Fight for what is right. Fight for what is just. Fight for your fellow students. Fight for your family. Fight for your community. Fight for your future. And remember, the administration, people in power, media, and other outlets will try to discredit the student movement. They will talk about how you're destroying the university and your community. Do not believe them for one second. Change does not happen because we sat down and waited for change. Change happens because people make it happen.
After the rally, members of the group delivered their petition to the offices of IU President Michael McRobbie and Provost Lauren Robel, as well as the IU Office of International Student Services. Indiana University spokesperson George Vlahakis said the university would not respond to questions about the rally, but he distributed an official statement in response. The statement refers to the term sanctuary campus as, quote, legally vague. It also states that university staff will not ask about a person's immigration or citizenship status while performing their routine duties, though it does state the university may disclose information to federal authorities if necessary to, quote, comply with a federal regulation or to protect a person's safety, unquote.
Last week, the U.S. Census Bureau backtracked on its proposal to ask about sexual orientation and gender identity on the 2020 census. At first, the Bureau planned to ask each respondent a question about their sexual orientation and gender identity, but they released a statement to the contrary last week. Bloomington Pride Chair Janae Cummings said this move would allow the government to ignore LGBT people.
Our government is still not ready to recognize that we exist. And this is a situation where I think they're trying to continue to make LGBTQ people be invisible, and we are not.
The campaign manager for Freedom Indiana, Chris Paulson, said excluding LGBT identification on census data creates problems.
The population is growing. More and more people are feeling comfortable to come out. So I think we definitely need to know where those people are so we can offer services to them.
The Census Bureau's action comes soon after the Trump administration rescinded protections for transgender students. Cummings said both events suggest the LGBT population will face hardships throughout this presidential term.
I think we need to be prepared for more actions that are directly opposed to the well-being of our community, whether it's lesbian, gays, bisexuals, transgender people, queer people. This is not an administration that is friendly to us. They are openly hostile to us, and I think we can expect more of the same.
Last year, 75 members of Congress had requested the Bureau add a subject on sexual orientation and gender identity to the 2020 census. Paulson said this support is evidence the subject will eventually be included.
we see, you know, public opinion changing on LGBT issues, and it's becoming more and more accepted. The numbers of millennials, percentage of millennials that identify as other than straight are 4 to 5 times that of Generation Xers. So I think people are feeling more comfortable. I don't know that the numbers are growing, but people are feeling more comfortable to identify publicly.
According to the Associated Press, the Census Bureau has included questions about same-sex couples since 1990, but not about LGBT identification.
The City of Bloomington Utilities Department, in collaboration with the City's Department of Economic and Sustainable Development, is in search of an artist who can paint a mural at 423 South Washington Street. Applicants must send in a written proposal, resume, and previous work accompanied by renderings for the project. Artists will receive $1,250 for their work. Submissions must be submitted no later than 5 p.m. on Friday, May 5th. For more information or questions, contact Sean Starowitz at 812-349-3534 or by email at starowis@bloomington.in.gov. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Jill Crawford.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Last month, President Trump released a budget blueprint that would cut grant funding that drives a multitude of local programs, including those administered by the City of Bloomington's Department of Housing and Neighborhood Development, or HAND. Last month, we explored how those proposed funding cuts would impact seniors in our community. This month, reporter Sarah Vaughn spoke with HAND Director Doris Sims about the effect Trump's proposed budget cuts could have on the housing programs her department administers.
How much federal grant money does your department get?
Well, currently we have three separate grants that we get from HUD. We get a grant that we anticipate for this coming funding year of about $700,000 in community development block grant funding. And then we get another about $500,000 in what's called home funds. And home funds can only be used for housing activities. And then we get a smaller grant, about $15,000, to do housing counseling services.
And in the Trump budget, it's not just the CDGB, the community development block grant dollars, that are in jeopardy. Are these other grants also in jeopardy?
Well, we know that in the budget that it's also the home program as well.
So that $500,000,
yes,
in home funds are also at risk of being axed?
Yes.
Can you describe for me some of the programs and the people that you help with those programs that are funded in whole or in part with the CDBG and the home funds?
Okay, so with the CDBG program, 15% of that grant can be used to fund social service agencies. And so the social service agencies that we've funded in the past includes like Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, which provides food to low-income people, as well as the Food Bank, which distributes to its member agencies that provides food within the community. We also help to provide housing programs in the community. So we've worked with Middleway House and with the housing needs for their clientele that are women up there part of domestic violence. We have helped with facilities improvements for agencies such as the Boys and Girls Club, New Hope, Life Designs. We run a housing rehabilitation program where we help low-income homeowners who may have rehab housing issues such as needing a new furnace or may have a leaking roof to make home improvements to their homes, as well as we offer a program to allow people to age in their home, which we provide accessibility improvements to their home, such as grab bars or maybe an accessibility ramp so people can age in place.
During the last program year, how many homeowners have you helped through this program?
So within the last program year, we've helped 20 homeowners from accessibility to full housing rehab to our other program, which is called emergency home repair, where they may need one emergency repair, say in the middle of winter where maybe their heating unit has went out, or in the summer where they may need replacement of an air conditioning because of a health issue. So we usually help about 20 homeowners a year with that program.
Is there anywhere else in the community that a homeowner could go? Say I have an older home and my furnace went out when it's really cold. Where else might I look if you were not able to help me?
So there's no other program that's similar to ours that provides this type of assistance in the city or even in the county, because we have county residents who call and needing that type of service, but it's not available in the county, only within the city limits.
If this particular funding stream for this program were to get axed, I know you said in the HT that $700,000 of the CDBG is just not something the city could absorb in its budget, and I'm assuming the $500,000 for the home funds would not be something that you could replace either.
Well, with the home program, you know, the city is in the process of trying to start a housing development fund to provide assistance that's similar to what the home program is providing. However, that program, the guidelines for that program have not been established yet.
Do you have a timeline for when those guidelines might be developed? I mean, are you hoping to have this maybe by the end of the year, or do you have a sense of how long it would take?
Well, you know, probably at least by the end of the year, we may be able to have our program guidelines in place. But we're still are actually working on the guidelines and even establishing the fund.
Where is money going to come from to fill that fund?
The city of Bloomington will be receiving a grant through the Community Foundation. Years ago, the city had established with the foundation what was called a housing trust fund, and the foundation will be granting some of that money back to the city, about $400,000 to start the housing fund. But, however, that was just approved, so the mechanics of how the fund would actually work still has to be established. The city looked at establishing its own housing development fund to be used as a complement to the home dollars. The home dollars serve people who are at 80% or less in median income, and I think that the city's fund was looking to possibly serve workforce housing population, and that is a population who is at 81% to 130% of median income. And so be able to provide more housing opportunities for people that are among a spectrum of financial need.
Are any of the positions in the HAND department, any staff positions, supported with federal grant dollars? And if those dollars get pulled, is anybody's job at risk?
Well, right now, we haven't done an analysis of that. Clearly, we do have several positions within the HAND department that are funded using the block grant dollars, because 20% of the grant we're allowed to use for administrative cost. I think once we know that the funding will be eliminated, then we'll make an analysis of each of our positions that are funded under the block grant program and decide what we're going to do at that time.
If the funding is pulled, either entirely or a large chunk of it, how do you make a decision about what programs you can cut and what programs you're going to reallocate dollars to? Is there a list of priorities you look to, or how do you make that decision?
Well, each year under the block grant program, we receive applications for the funding, so each funding round is totally different. I think that if the program is totally eliminated or is substantially cut, then what we will do is do more prioritization of the applications, because, as I stated, 15% can be used for social service funding, 20% for administrative costs, and the balance is used for what we call physical improvement, where our housing programs come from, our facility improvement projects, funding dollars that we give to the nonprofit organizations, as well as we fund our local public housing agency and do facility improvements within our public housing units. So I think that we will still use our same process that we've used in the past and see which one provide more of a benefit to the community as a whole. And that decision is made each year by what we call our Citizens Advisory Committee, which is a group of citizens who come together to evaluate each of the applications and make recommendations to the mayor and the city council for funding of these block grant dollars. I don't see any change in that process. I think that it will probably be a lot harder moving forward, especially if the funding is substantially cut. home funding that is done internally, consulting with the administration. So that does not have to go through the same citizen participation process as the community development block grant dollars. But how it will affect the home funding is that we will not be able to assist developers in the development of more affordable housing within our community.
Is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know?
The programs that we're offered within our community are really critical to the low and moderate income people who live within the community. And if they were substantially cut or eliminated, then it would affect a lot of Bloomington residents. And so I urge everyone, whether you've taken advantage of any of the programs that we funded in the past or not, to contact your congressperson to let them know that they should vote against totally eliminating the CDBG or the home programs.
That was Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn speaking with Doris Sims, the director of Bloomington's Housing and Neighborhood Development Department. Last December, Congress approved temporarily maintaining 2016 baseline funding levels through April 28th. Though Congress is now in a two-week recess, passing a budget or another temporary resolution to maintain current funding levels will be a priority when it reconvenes.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support also comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, my name is Ellen Jacart, and I volunteer with MC IRIS. And MC IRIS stands for Monroe County Identify and Reduce Invasive Species. Until I retired at the end of last year, I worked on Natural Areas Managers, directing management of the Nature Conservancy's preserves in Indiana. MC IRIS was a way to work locally in places that really weren't part of my job, but that I lived close to and really enjoy getting to know and recreating in. This is something that I knew once I decided I was going to retire, that MC IRIS I'm going to keep doing because I just enjoy it so much. You know, the people that I work with out in the field, and because it is my backyard, you know, to be able to go to these beautiful places and know that I can help make them better is just a really satisfying feeling. What's inspirational about the group to me is that there are so many landowners in Monroe County who really care about their land, that they really want native plants and pollinators and wildlife to benefit from their land. And MC IRIS helps us all make our land as diverse as possible by working to control invasive plants. Cascades Park just stands as such a wonderful example of the difference you can make. You go out and you see an area that is covered by Asian bush honeysuckle and garlic mustard, and then you look at the places that have been cleaned up by MC IRIS and City Parks workers and other volunteers, and you realize this is what brings you all of our native wildflowers, our blue phlox and celandine poppy and Jack in the Pulpit and Spring Beauty, and you can remake that nature preserve and bring back the diversity that's lost by invasive plants. I think one of the ways that MC IRIS has made a real difference is that we have volunteers in our group who will go out and meet with any landowner in the county. If you own land, you can ask MC IRIS to come and visit. And we have taught dozens of landowners in the county how to identify the invasive plants on their land. So we kind of bring the education, and by doing that, I've gotten to see a lot of different parts of the county and helped people start what they didn't know how to start, they didn't know how to identify, they didn't know how to control, but we're basically seeding this information throughout the county. And then you can see and hear from these people on what a difference it's made on their land. One of the biggest problems with invasive plants is that people feel overwhelmed. Once they learn and they look and they say, oh my gosh, it's everywhere. But you learn techniques and strategies on how you can work on your land and bite off as much as you can chew this year. And there's no reason to feel overwhelmed. Together we can make this happen. The vast majority of the invasive plants that we're battling were planted deliberately as landscaping plants. And so we encourage people to make better choices and give them ideas of what native plants they could use in their landscaping instead. Sustaining Nature and Your Land is the name of our annual event, Snail Day, and it'll be June 10th from 9 until 1 in City Hall. And what we do is we talk about invasive plants. People can bring any invasive plant, any weed from their yard that we want. We have the weed lab set up with experts, and you can ask, what is it? How do I control it? We'll have talks on how to identify invasive plants, the native plants you can use for landscapings. We'll be giving out $5 vouchers to people to buy a native plant out in the farmer's market, which will be going on at the same time. It's a great way to learn about MC Iris and the kinds of things that we do. Thanks for listening. I am Ellen Jacart with MC Iris.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Tara Fahimi, Jared Dill, Sheila Raghavendran, and Joe Crawford, and our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Activate is produced by Jennifer Brooks, along with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. For WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programs, online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.